Good morning, and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Kathleen O., and I am a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, January 17th. I think I have this date wrong. Sorry. I'm so sorry. Today is Monday, January 28th, 2019, and this is the 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting. Today we are reading from the Big Book, and we are at the page 2, second paragraph, by the time I had completed the course, through 3 paragraphs ending, I made a host of fair weather friends, and comments will be on all 3 paragraphs. Today's readers are Nancy L. reading the 12 steps, Betsy H. reading the 12 traditions, and the readers of our text are Kathy G., Kathy Jo P., and Susan H. The share ID for Sunday, January 27th, is 12,446. And for this morning, 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, the share ID is 12,469. That's 12469. Excuse me. Our newcomer greeter for today is Melanie C. The OA preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, excuse me, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. And if I could get you to *1 to mute, I'm hearing some background noise. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. And I will now ask Nancy L. to read the 12 steps.
Good morning, everyone. Nancy L. How it works. Oh, I'm sorry. 12 steps. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for the knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Pass.
Thank you, Nancy L. And Betsy H., would you please read the 12 traditions?
Hi. This is Betsy H., the 12 traditions. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for a group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues. Hence, the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Pass.
Thank you, Betsy. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you are done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We're on page 2. The second paragraph, starting with by the time I had completed the course, reading through 3 paragraphs, ending with I made a host of fair weather friends, and we'll be commenting on all 3 paragraphs. So, Kathy G., if you could get us started, please.
Thanks, Kathleen. Good morning, everyone. It's Kathy G., calling from my igloo in Illinois. Okay. By the time I had completed the course, I knew the law was not for me. The inviting maelstrom of Wall Street had me in its grip. Business and financial leaders were my heroes. Out of this alloy of drink and speculation, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. Living honestly, my wife and I saved $1,000. It went into certain securities, then cheap and rather unpopular. I rightly imagined that they would someday have a great rise. I failed to persuade my broker friends to send me out looking over factories and managements, but my wife and I decided to go anyway. I had developed a theory that most people lost money in stocks through ignorance of markets. I discovered many more reasons later on. We gave up our positions, and off we roared on a motorcycle, the sidecar stuffed with tent, blankets, a change of clothes, and 3 huge volumes of a financial reference service. Our friends thought a lunacy commission should be appointed. Perhaps they were right. I had had some success at speculation, so we had a little money, but we once worked on a farm for a month to avoid drawing on our small capital. That was the last honest manual labor on my part for many a day. We covered the whole eastern United States in a year. At the end of it, my reports to Wall Street procured me a position there and the use of a large expense account. The exercise of an option brought in more money, leaving us with a profit of several thousand dollars for that year. For the next few years, fortune threw money and applause my way. I had arrived. My judgment and ideas were followed by many to the tune of paper millions. The great boom of the late 20s was seething and swelling. Drink was taking an important and exhilarating part in my life. There was loud talk in the jazz places uptown. Everyone spent in thousands and chattered in millions. scoffers could scoff and be damned, I made a host of fair weather friends. Okay, so I'm just going to see where I can relate in to Bill W. here. And the overall feeling I get from these three paragraphs is just the draw of excitement, and how just looking for that next best thing. You know, he decided he didn't want to do law now, and so now he's going to go into the business and financial markets, and it's just looking for that buzz, you know, feeling maybe special and like I had arrived kind of thing. And then, and just that feeling, I can remember that in my life, in business, in situations. I've done a lot of things where I'm on stage and in some pretty exciting situations. I just got a flash of once I was on a balcony in this gorgeous place in California, and I was in some Bob Mackie gown on a balcony singing a French song. I mean, it's just like wild, some of these things as I think back on them. And a lot of them I can't even remember, because even though I was doing some of these great and exciting things, it's like I never felt enough and I was looking for more, or I'd feel like, oh, was I trying to look like I was enough and I came off as too much? And then I'd need that food to calm all that down. But a line that really jumped out at me was on page 2, where it says, I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang and all but cut me to ribbons. When I read that, I just thought that was bulimia for me. That was just that thing that was kind of a weapon against this war of the weight, you know, that had been creeping on me when I first got into the bulimia in college and had a guy tell me that he was no longer sexually attracted to me, which for me was just basically like death at that moment, which kind of makes me laugh now. But I thought, wow, you know, so I found out about this bulimia. And at one point, you know, I could control it, like when I did it, when I didn't do it. But then there came the day when it turned in its flight and all but cut me to ribbons. And, you know, it was 1990. I almost died. And it took me a long time to find recovery, but I've passed over a year and a half of abstinence now because of all of you, this program, the 12 steps, and it's just absolutely miraculous. So I'm seeking God today and seeking more recovery and not that buzz from the food or taking the edge off today, and I'm grateful. So thanks. I look forward to hearing the rest of you. Thanks, Kathleen. My best.
And thank you, Kathy G. That was perfect timing. Okay, who would like to share on these three paragraphs?
Laura W.
Laura
Susan
W.
H.
Tara L.
Susan, wait, who came after Susan H.?
Linda D. from Connecticut.
Linda D.
Julie E.B.
Julie E.B.
Kara L.
Was it Kara R.?
Kara L.
L, okay.
Jen R.
Roz G.
Jen R. Roz G. Okay. I have Laura W., Susan H., Linda D., Julie E.B., Kara L., Jen R., and Roz G. So go ahead, Laura.
Thank you. I'll start my timer. Good morning, everyone. This is Laura W., recovered compulsive eater anorexic in South Jersey. Yeah, you know, Bill's story, I could so identify with him when he said, I had arrived. I know that's this morning's meeting, everybody talked about that one little sentence, I had arrived. And he uses the word I in these paragraphs over and over and over again. And I just, the ego and the thought of only himself really it was overwhelming. I mean, but I look back and I was exactly the same way, you know. His faulty dependence on people, places, and things, and especially money and alcohol, I was the same way. I was no different. He was driven for excess. You know, no matter how much weight I lost, I still didn't feel like I had arrived. And people would say, oh, you look great, you look great. And then they wouldn't. And then after a while, they weren't saying anything anymore. And I'm like, why aren't they saying anything? Little did I know, I was walking around like a skeleton. And it says, my judgment you know, his judgment. My judgment was so far gone. I didn't even know reality. I couldn't even understand what the truth was. And everything I did revolved around my desire for food and being skinny. And I was money motivated too. You know, anytime something at work went well, I had arrived. Yes, I had arrived. But when it came to my weight, I had never arrived. And today, I know I haven't arrived. I know that being in recovery, I've been recovered for over 14 years, and I know I haven't arrived because I don't want to arrive. I want to keep doing this process every day. And every day, you know, is a day to get to know God better for me. And I know I haven't arrived because I get to do 10 steps every day. And if I had arrived, I wouldn't have a need for 10 steps. So I get to do my 10 steps and be reminded on a daily basis that my reliance and my dependence must be on God, not on self, not on money, not on numbers on the scale or calories on a bag or excess. You know, I feel today that, you know, I heard that, you know, there's two types of people in the world, people who go to 12-step meetings and people who need 12-step meetings. And I really love this program. I love how the 12 steps have changed my life and continue to change it. And today I have real true friends, not fair weather friends, that I can rely on and depend on. And God especially. He's my ultimate source of strength, and he's my also ultimate source of dependence. Thanks for letting me share. I pass.
And thank you, Laura W. So Susan H., you're up next, followed by Linda D.
Okay, this is Susan H. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Ohio. And, yep, I'm going to drag out I had arrived again because it's what really stands out to me. It's what I identify with. Even though my I had arrived moments were a lot different than Bill's, I had many. As a little girl, I remember wanting to go to school. I wanted so much to just go to school. And I felt like I had arrived when I did. I found out that school didn't fill all those things that I expected. And then I wanted to leave school in my teens to get married. And I did. And being married equaled I had arrived. I was loved. Everything was going to be okay. And so, children, being a mother equaled I had arrived. That would solve everything, and it didn't. I got my high school equivalents maybe 10 years after quit school. Great test scores. I had arrived. I am smart equals I had arrived. I got my nursing license eventually, and oh, I so thought I had arrived. I lost 100 pounds, and I had arrived. So I had lots of I had arrived moments, which every time I was sure that these arriving moments would fill that hollowness. And each one failed eventually because I was sure my worth was wrapped up in each next thing. I was wrong. My compulsive eating just kept growing. I was powerless over food. My life was unmanageable. A higher power was the only way to sanity for me. I know now. He was there. My higher power was there and loved me through it all. But I just wasn't looking, I guess. So glad that I surrendered my will and my life to a higher power. I will never arrive. I'm sure of that. But every day I pick up the toolkit, which is the 12 steps, and keep trudging. I am so grateful for how my life has changed. I'm grateful for this meeting to help me look at my blessings. Grateful for all the people that call in and grateful for a chance to serve. So thanks to all of you, and I will pass.
And thank you, Susan H. Linda D., it is your turn, followed by Julie E.B. Linda D., star one to unmute, please. Okay, perhaps we've lost Linda D. So Julie E.B., go ahead.
Hi, this is Julie E.B., gratefully recovered, one day at a time. I just want to share about this boomerang, powerful image for me. I was lonely, and I didn't get what I needed in my childhood, but I learned that by success, by passing exams, by earning scholarships, by basically relying on myself, getting out on the road, I started running, and I could eat whatever I wanted. And this was the alloy, that if I was being validated by the outside world, then I was enough. And same is true when I got in my profession was doing well, and I was married, and I was controlling that, and I was a mom, and that brought so much love into my life, external validation. But then life began to have problems, and this was a boomerang that came back, because all I knew, I was just a black hole. I didn't even know who I was. All I knew was what the outside world said about me, and this cut me to ribbons and led me deeper and deeper into the food and deeper into shame, because the outside world, I was just hiding behind my own fat, hiding behind my own compulsive behaviors, hiding in my room. And so this was a boomerang that cut me to shreds, and this book opens the door to the fact that, yeah, I needed some of those things to survive and get out of my childhood, but then I needed to let those ego pieces fall by the wayside, humble myself, and I need every one of you, and I need a power greater than myself, my higher power that cares for and protects me no matter what the outside world says, no matter what even I say or feel. I'm okay today. Thanks for letting me share, and I pass.
And thank you, Julie E.B. Linda D., are you there by any chance? Okay. Well, let's go with Kara L., followed by Jen R.
Good morning. This is Kara L., recovered compulsive overeater in Southern California. And I love what I've heard already today. Same things have come into my mind. I commenced to forge the weapon that one day would turn in its flight like a boomerang, and all that cut me to ribbons. I was always looking for that moment I had arrived. I learned very early on that if I was the good girl and I worked hard, I would arrive someday. And I kept striving for that. And my boomerang was outside approval and acceptance and self-will. I had enough self-will or willpower, everything would happen and I would arrive. And until it didn't happen, until it came back and I woke up and there was no more willpower and there was no more, everything was falling apart around me. And it wasn't until I stepped into the doors, the rooms of OA and then into vision that I came to believe the only way I arrive is when I am out of my own will and in the will of my higher power. And then I wake up every morning and I ask my higher power for guidance and to be in out of self-will and in my higher power's will. And that's the only approval that I need today, is the approval of my higher power and the strength and the guidance of my higher power. And I'm so grateful for vision, and I'm so grateful for being able to have that boomerang cut me to shreds. So I was ready. I was ready when vision came into my life. I pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Kara L. So Jen R., you are up next, followed by Roz G.
Hi, this is Jen R., compulsive overeater in New Jersey. And I wanted to talk about wasted potential. Bill had a great deal of potential. He was very smart. He was very creative. He thought of doing things that other people didn't think of doing. And if he had not descended into alcoholism, he would have had a phenomenal career, just done amazing things. And I always think about that when I read this, because I had potential, probably not as great as Bill's potential, but I had potential in my career. And I have never reached it because the weight and this lack of stamina from the weight, the constant mental obsession about needing to lose weight, about how I could manage my weight, about what I could do to manage my weight and my health has always taken over most of my mind and taken up most of my energy. And even though I've lost 50 pounds and I'm no longer obsessed with the food thanks to the steps, I still have a long way to go to build up my strength again, to be able to try and maybe reach a little bit of my potential. And I've wasted many, many years in program trying to do things my way, never completely giving myself to my higher power. And I've learned now that I have to do that. And there's an AA expression that if you ain't praying, you ain't staying. And I was reminded of that this morning. And now I do get on my knees every morning and I do pray, and it makes a huge difference. And I never did that every day before. And I always lost my abstinence. But this time feels different because I'm doing that. And I hope maybe I can reach a little of my potential. Thanks for letting me share. With that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Jen R. And before we go with Roz G, just a reminder, we are on page 2, the second paragraph. By the time I had completed the course, reading through 3 paragraphs, ending with, I made a host of fair weather friends. And after Roz G, I'll be taking more names. So go ahead, Roz G.
Good morning. My name's Roz G, and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I'm so grateful to share. And thank you for calling on me, and thank you for your service. And what my sponsor tells me I have is the disease of more. When I eat macaroni and cheese, I want more. When I eat chocolate cake, I want more. When I go to college, the degree that I'm working on isn't enough. I want more. And then after that, I'm not happy with that, and I want to, can you top that, you know? I would like to say that I think it's important that I know myself well enough that I can tell what my likes and dislikes are. You know, as a member of Al-Anon, I got so enmeshed in my ex-husband that I didn't, you know who I was anymore. And of course, the eating and the food came along with all that clouded thinking. But I understand that, you know, whatever it is that in my life that is not fulfilling me, it's because I have a God-shaped hole. Only God and my understanding of a power greater than myself within me is going to satisfy me. Nothing on the outside will do it unless my insides are satisfied. And this has to happen one day at a time. I have to get up in the morning and ask God, what do you want me to do today? Because when I'm doing what God wants me to do, at this point in my recovery, I'm filled with joy. At first, I was rebellious. I didn't want what God wanted me to do. I want what I wanted to do. But, you know, God works in tandem with me. We work together. My God knows what I like, and He wants me to be happy, joyous, and free. And so I work with Him, and I seek Him in the morning. But I certainly can identify with the disease of more, never being satisfied. You know, I always wanted the lead in the play. I did a lot of, you know, theater in high school and community college. And I remember I got like a supporting role in one of the plays, and I cried to the director, and she put me in my place. And I needed to be put there. And then I got an assistant directorship once instead of a role, and I was like, you know, me, an assistant director. I can laugh at all that now. And you know, whatever I get, I need to be grateful for and thank God that, you know, I didn't get something I didn't need it, because I don't need to bite more off than I can chew. Ha ha, metaphor there. Anyway, thank you for letting me share. And with that, I pass.
And thank you, Roz G. Okay, who else would like to share on these 3 paragraphs?
Marissa
Rebecca
E.
P.
John K.
I got Marissa E. and John K. And who is between the two of those people?
Rebecca P.
Rebecca.
Patty T.
Beatrice O.
Stephanie, Patty, Beatrice. Okay, let's stop there for right now. I don't have a lot of initials, but I'll get them. So I have Marissa E., Rebecca, John K., Stephanie, Patty, and Beatrice. Go ahead, Marissa.
Thank you, Kathleen. Good morning, my fellows. This is Marissa E. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater outside Los Angeles. Oh, right? How is Bill's story my story? That's what my sponsor taught me. Right? Do I think like him? Do I act like him? And do I eat like he drank? And I remember, you know, putting down the food at the beginning of September, and, you know, we got on it. And I remember reading this line, business and financial leaders were my heroes. Okay? Business and financial leaders were not my heroes. They never have been. I don't think they ever will be. But what did business and financial leaders have and represent to Bill? When we look back at the previous paragraph, I proved to the world I was important, right? These men, those that represented importance to him, right? That represented power, prestige, validation, money, and applause. And so, you know, who were my heroes in my disease? And I remember thinking back, it wasn't business and financial leaders, but it was thin and beautiful women. Right. I just remember in middle school and in high school and in college, I just remember I worshiped these actresses and socialites, musicians, female athletes, fashionistas. I was obsessed. I would just look at them and cut out their pictures and put them on my refrigerator, right, to motivate me not to open it. And I would look at their outfits and just I worship them, right? And kind of like Bill, I talked about it before, I didn't want to prove I was important, but I wanted to be loved. I proved to the world I was lovable. And these women, that's what I saw them get. They just were loved and adored and acknowledged. And, right? And how did I try and do that, right? This alley of drink and speculation, mine was food and diet and exercise, right? And that was the weapon that one day, you know, all but cut me to ribbons. And so, you know, I'm grateful that I had the clarity to see that, right? And that I can just relate. How do I identify in, you know, how can I just, you know, just look at it from my perspective, but also what Bill is saying and make it my story. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you.
And thank you, Marissa E. So Rebecca T., you're up next, followed by John K. Star one to unmute, Rebecca. I think I have the last initial of your name right. Okay. I'm going to come back to you, Rebecca. John K., can you go ahead?
I'm sorry, did you say John?
yes, I did. Thanks, John.
Sorry, you always have that. You are unmuted and you missed that.
Right.
Good morning. I'm John Kiernan, recovered compulsive eater in Los Angeles. That's where I'm from. The first thing I'd say one thing, it was sort of touched on by somebody else, but when I look at the history, you know, the history here, and it was said that if Bill Wilson had never drank, I believe he'd still have a Wikipedia entry because he started something that didn't exist and is now a huge industry, which is stock market research. He had an idea that could have, you know, again, he could have been everything he wanted to be, everything he pushed himself to be. He would have been a giant in that industry, but, you know, again, alcohol and food and all these things took me down just like him. And, you know, you look at those two sentences. Somebody just said it, the linking together of the two sentences. I'll prove that I'm important and I have arrived. Wow. See that thing I was telling myself I would do? I did. And yet you just scrape down a layer and you see not somebody trying to prove to others he's important, but to prove to himself he's important. And all that comes down. And, boy, trust me, I identify with this up and down. That it really drills down to a lack of self-esteem. you know, I always say fear of not being enough. And so instead of having an inner core, some kind of a connection with a power greater than myself, I was constantly wanting to know I'm okay by looking to you. And of course, you know, I remember I was in a therapy session once and I was talking about that. And the therapist said, John, you could talk to 100 people and 99 of them would tell you you're great and the 100th one wouldn't and you'd be devastated. And it was so true because I put so much of myself onto somebody else because, like, you know, they used the proverbial hole in the donut thing. That was me. And I also say I can really identify with this career path stuff. Not that I was in business, but I think you saw a guy who, when he got out of the Army, didn't know what he was going to do. He didn't have a passion. I have friends, they know they wanted to be doctors from an early age, or they wanted to be actors, or they wanted to do this. And Bill, well, let me try law. Oh, let me try business. Let me try this. And it was the only thing I think that mattered to him was, what can I find to validate myself? And you know, there's nothing there, and you drown it in booze, you drown it in donuts or whatever. And it isn't until you come here and you do the work and you do the steps and you start to find some kind of a conscious contact with a higher power that whispers in your ear every day, you know what, you are enough. You are enough. Hey, take the stick out of your hand. Stop beating yourself up. You're okay. As it said on page 417, and I'll end, you know, when I criticize you or me, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. And I especially think about when I'm criticizing me, I'm criticizing God's handiwork. And I'm learning a day at a time. And trust me, it goes up and down. That's what I should do. Thanks for letting me share.
And thank you, John K. Rebecca, are you there?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
Hi, sorry, I was muted, I guess. It's Rebecca T. from Bakersfield, California. So grateful, recovered for today. With talking about I've arrived, I'm so glad that I learned slowly in this program that I'm not going to arrive. Because, you know, yeah, for so long, just like all the other shares, I reached for always that one thing that was going to allow me to arrive, and then it would provide me with, I don't know, some sort of feeling that I would always hope would hold. And no matter what it was, whether it was jobs or boyfriends or relationships or, you know, recognition from other people or, you know, food, I would get there. Or loss of weight, so many times, you know, getting on that diet, losing that weight, I've arrived. Gaining again, getting on that diet, losing weight. Oh, my God, I did that for, like, my whole life. And yeah, no matter what, my empty hole was still there. And I wondered why I still had that, you know, feeling of sadness and being alone and not feeling good enough. And then I just, you know, pick up again and say, oh, okay, well, I guess that wasn't it. I have to look for something else, you know, so therefore either dropping friends or leaving relationships or change, moving countries. You know, I've did it all trying to arrive. And it's beautiful that just for today, I can be enough. I have higher power with me. I've learned to grab the tools and use them efficiently and effectively one day at a time. And then when I'm not in that center, and then when I forget, then I can pick up the phone and all of you fellows remind me where I need to be. Although the weight has come off, the major thing is that because I don't have to arrive anymore, I don't have to carry that weight. And I don't have to carry that pressure. And I could just be me for today. Thank you for letting me share. Bye.
Thank you, Rebecca T. So Stephanie, you're up next, followed by Patty T. And Stephanie, if I could get the first initial of your last name.
Sure. It's it's Stephanie N. I'm from Kansas, recovered. And I could relate in as far as having a host of fair-weathered friends as well. And I had a lot of those friends, those fair weathered friends on my resentment list. And it was only after looking at my inventory that I could clearly see my part, that if anybody got too close to me, I would push them away. But I would, you know, I had shifted the blame that it was their fault, you know, that they were a bad friend. But I was the one who was pushing them away. And I was filled with dishonesty. I would say what I thought someone wanted to hear, and I would, you know, be the person that I thought that they wanted me to be. And so there was no truth. There was no authenticity there. And so, of course, you know, no one could trust me. And I didn't understand that. I thought, well, I'm being everything they want me to be. I'm saying everything they want to hear. Why am I not getting the approval that I want? And, you know, I lived in that self-seeking, that one-sided relationship, just looking for that validation, looking for the love and acceptance and the worth that I needed. And I just felt so alone. I was surrounded by people, but I felt completely alone. And so I pushed harder and I fought harder to be accepted and to be understood and to be filled up with the things that I needed. But it was only after doing my inventory that I could see that I was trying to get something that these finite people couldn't give me, which was self-acceptance. And once I started to lean into my higher power and I could feel what I needed to feel for my higher power, which was love that didn't come from anyone else, then I started to love myself, and that self-acceptance started to come, and the self-seeking slipped away. And with that, I pass. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Stephanie N. Patty T., you are up next, followed by Beatrice O.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much, moderator. And oh, my gosh, the shares this morning have just filled me. I ditto everything I've heard, honestly. You know, yesterday I was at a step study, and we were reading in the last part of the AA 12 and 12, and on step 12, about how psychiatrists all discovered that the one thing that alcoholics had in common was their childish thinking and behavior and their sense of grandiosity. And these paragraphs remind me so much of my own grandiosity. This man lived in the idea of grandiosity. If I can be, you know, if I can arrive, if I can become one of those, somebody else's hero, you know, if I, you know, it was like all of the if I, if only I, you know, and that ego, boy. And this is so timely for me because I'm bumping up against my own ego lately, you know, and it's painful. It's painful to see that. And it's God's gentle way of helping me right size. You know, my experience is that every time I thought I had arrived, I had only come with myself and that I needed something more. Because arriving wasn't enough. It was never enough. Nothing was ever enough. Not the love of others, not, you know, I don't even know if the love of God would have been enough. You know, I didn't recognize it because I did, as someone said, suffer from that disease of more, needing, wanting more. And, you know, just to see, you know, at the end when he says, I made a host of fair weather friends, my realization when I finally walked into the rooms of Overeaters Anonymous some 12 years ago and realized that I didn't really have in the city I live in a friend that I would call close enough to hold my hand to go with me. And that was interesting to me. And even more so now because I didn't just make a host of fair weather friends. I was the fair weather friend. When I didn't meet that more definition that I thought I needed to be, I let go of the people who had accompanied me on that road. I just dropped out. I isolated. And he even says in the next paragraph, and we'll get to that tomorrow, I guess, I became a lone wolf. So I'm just so grateful today that I don't have to be that person, that I can reach out when I'm bumping up against my ego, that I can get to a meeting when my ego's talking too loud, and that I have the grace of God to help me through. Thanks, I'll pass.
Thank you, Patty T. And Beatrice O, go ahead.
Hello, this is Beatrice O. Can I be heard?
Yes.
I really love these chapters about arriving and fair weather friends. And I think that it's part of our culture here as an American to arrive. You know, being thin, having a nice house, the picket fence, kids, you know, two cars in the, you know how they say, two chickens in every pot. I think it's just part of our culture to arrive, the education and all those things. But so not only that, I think it's part of the human condition and our ego. And, you know, I had a really large ego, but inside I was inferior. And I think that's why it takes we have a spiritual solution and only God can heal us. And I'll always be empty if I seek external forces on this earth to fill that God place in my soul, in my heart, in my spirit. And I brought all my maladaptive behaviors into OA. You know, the abstinence for a long time was so elusive to me. And, you know, and I looked at people with decades of abstinence and I would say, God, I want that. I want what they have. And, oh my God, and she has recovery. It's quality, not quantity. And I brought my disease right into this program of wanting more. And so now I know that I'm recovered, but I'm not healed. I have to stay close to God. And as far as fair weather friends, you know, I retired from a company after 35 years, and I can say I have two friends that are real friends that I continue a relationship with. So I don't know. I've been a fair weather friend, and even in this program, I've been a fair weather friend. But now that I am recovered and I've worked the steps over and over again, I can be authentic. And OA taught me that, to be real. And God, anyway, with that, I'll pass.
Thank you, Beatrice O. We have time for about a 1.5 minute share. Would anyone like to take that?
I will. This is Jackie H.
I'd like to take it.
Go. I got Jackie H. Sorry. Thanks. Go ahead, Jackie.
Oh, thank you so much. Jackie H., recovered in Colorado. I will hurry, hurry, hurry. Oh, the shares have been so amazing. And, you know, I'm so grateful for Bill Wilson. Bless his heart. He wrote this book out of his own pain. He had a human problem, just like all of us. And so much has been said about his self-esteem and trying to arrive, not being enough, trying to arrive so he could feel like he was enough. Oh, man, I relate with all of that. And my boomerang also, as someone mentioned earlier, was my constant need for accolades, my constant need for approval, and that did really come back and bite me in the butt. And also the always arriving, always would arrive, but it was never enough. So it was about my self-esteem. It was about my emptiness. I forgot who I was. I thought I had to prove something. And what I am getting here lately, thank you, is that I am an innocent, beautiful child of God. And that really is enough. When I can remember that, it is enough. When I forget it, I'm off and running again. Thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Jackie H. And thank you, everyone who shared this morning. Special thanks to Team Monday, Nancy L., Betsy H., Kathy G., Kathy Jo P., and Susan H. And Kathy Jo P., if you could please read a vision for you.
Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.